Oh, this is a bitter source of disagreement in the Luggery.
There will be fighting later.
There will be weak fighting later.
Check it out, people. It's the Lug Radio Conference Special.
It is. Lug Radio 2007 Summer Conference Special, which is rather a long title for this show.
A Summer Conference Special.
It is. We've covered two conferences this summer. Mm. Well, three if you count Lug Radio Live, but that got its own show. Quadec, the No Museum Developer Conference, which was in July. And PyCon, where the UK Python Festival. Conference.
Where we're at now.
Not Pikey Festival at all.
It is. Have you seen the delegates?
Oh! You're aware we got in for free, right? Anyway.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I can't comment on the homeless, the indoor hobos that appear to be walking around.
The point is that we'll have interviews from people at Quadec, interviews from people at PyCon in the one show.
Indeed. So, it's pretty exciting. It's been a couple of good conferences, and it's good to be here. We want to do more things like this, don't
we? It has, yes. So, we're covering it. I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm John O'Bacon.
I'm Adam Sweet.
And I'm Chris Proctor.
He's the proctologist.
The proctologist.
Turns out that...
You're so going to die for that one eventually. You know?
It turns out that Chris's workmates have just found out that he's known as the proctologist, which we think's hilarious.
The best thing about it was they didn't know what proctologist meant, so they had to go and look it up on Wikipedia. Yeah, Chris Proctor, the Lord of the Ring, is here with us.
Doctor Extraordinaire.
Fuck you. Fuck you. And fuck you.
Thank you.
And your mum.
So, PyCon, what do we think?
Here we are at PyCon.
The air is crackling with excitement and anticipation.
That's just the shit mics. Yeah.
the reason being that at the moment everybody's in a talk and we're sitting in a kind of hallway area on our own.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. The PyCon team, who are John Pinner and Zeth Green and a few other people, part of the Python UK group, obviously decided that what they wanted to do was have a Python West Midlands. Sorry, yes. They obviously decided what they wanted to do was have a Python conference here in the UK. I think it's quite a cool idea that they've gone from, wouldn't it be good if we had a Python conference, to we have a Python conference in about 4 months.
Yeah, I think the basic idea was there's a EuroPython which was in Estonia or something.
Lithuania.
Some other accession state.
Somewhere a very, very long way away. So the idea was that it would be a good idea to have one that kind of like they to get to, yeah. I think. It's gone from, I can't remember when it was first... PyWM group was first talked about, but it was this year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Py West Midlands. That sounds like a group I want to be a part of.
Yeah, exactly. special pie eating group. But yeah, I mean,
to be honest, you both look like you are members of it. So.
Listen, pal, you are one to talk. You're not exactly spelt
moving swiftly on.
More important topics. There are several spectacular hairstyles on this display.
There are some stunning cuts. I mean, there's this guy walking around who seriously looks like the lead singer from Europe, and he's got the outfit. He's got the sunglasses.
He's also got the retired 20 years later rock star look, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got the the retired haircut.
Business at the front, party at the back.
There's a proper mullet as well walking around.
I mean, but getting back to, you know, the conference that we're at.
Oh yeah, Python. Yeah.
They've got
whatever.
They've got a pretty large amount of stuff. They've got three separate tracks and then a fourth sign up and do it on the day track. And they've got, they're covering an awful lot of different things about Python. There's web frameworks and there's stackless Python. And there's stuff which is integral to Python itself, like PyPy.
The fuck is PyPy?
PyPy is Python being developed in Python.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and if your question is then going to be,
that'll be fast.
The proctologist says, well, how does that work? And I said, go to the talk, that's what the talk's for.
And then you promptly distracted me when it was on, so I haven't actually been to it.
It sounds a bit self-referential.
It is a bit self-referential. They've got various arguments that it's going to help them establish things that they don't really know about the Python core. In the same way that when they ported Python to Java and made Jython, they learned quite a lot about how Python works internally. And this is a similar kind of thing. In fact, the same way that IronPython, which is Python on .NET.
I have a question. Worked.
Yes.
Python 3000. Yep. Is that Python that runs on those Terminator robots?
Yes, that's what it is.
I thought so.
Actually, yes. You download the Python interpreter and then you plug it into the robot and then the robot melts into like liquid metal and runs away from you. Shut up. No, it isn't.
I tell you what, I'm quite pleased that Guido's not here. Weirdo Van Rossum.
Guido? It's a picture of him in my talk.
Well, because I humiliated myself when I was in front of him.
Idiot. But yes, so we're here at PyCon. We're going to be talking to various people.
Did you just say there's a picture of him in your talk? Like
there
that's
is.
Something new and different at a Python conference.
Yeah, but it's this ultra gimpy picture to make a point.
Yeah, because he doesn't look ultra gimpy as it is.
No, he just looks gimpy as it is. Much as we respect the mighty Hedda Van Ross. But yes,
he's very cool. Very cool. I just thought I'd say that.
Liar.
Having already insulted the figurehead of this entire conference.
who's not here, incidentally.
Yeah.
But yes.
Slack show from from Weirdo.
Fairly important to him.
So let's talk some people, shall we?
Do we have to?
Hmm.
I suppose we should.
Okay, we're talking to Christian Tismer, who, among other things, does stackless Python. So, Christian, how are you enjoying PyCon?
Oh, I enjoyed very, very much, much more after I have finished my talk, because I was afraid to do it wrong again. But this time I'm quite happy because everybody seemed to have understood a lot. So,
cool. So, do you want to tell us a bit about what stackless Python is?
Stackless Python is a branch of the normal Python implementation to allow massive multi-processing. It's like a threading package where you can have thousands and millions of tiny tasks, and it's very suitable to model games with lots of behaviors and different characters, for instance.
Cool. Is this something that, when people talk about Python, sometimes they comment about how the performance is not as good as other languages. Does this help improve the performance of Python?
Yes, it improves the performance because you can take very simple and different approaches to do the task switching in your programs. So the overhead is much smaller and you don't need to use threads. You can do applications which are not possible with threads. One very good example is the EVE Online game from CCP Games in Reykjavik, which makes heavy use of Stackless and is one of its major sponsors.
And how mature is Stackless Python?
I would say it's almost ready. It is always trying to keep up with the development of CPython. And it's mature in the sense that there are not so many changes. But after PyPy has developed a full Stackless implementation on top of it, lots of new ideas came up. And PyPy is now a testbed to test new structures and ideas. And maybe they can go back into Stackless Python C implementation. Or maybe at some point PyPy will take over the CPython and everything merges into one.
So, just back to the performance thing, it's it affects the creation of threads. So it's only if you're doing multi-threaded stuff, fantastic. If you're doing normal,
single-threaded,
then it doesn't help. Is that the
No? You have a single-threaded approach where you are using micro-threads. So you have threads in one real thread. So there's no threading at all. You have your own threads with you, and you are controlling them all, and they are running in a single process.
Right.
So the overhead of thread switching is smaller than by a factor of 100.
Okay, I think I get that. Okay.
Does that make it, if I'm understanding you correctly, does that mean it's more suitable for, you get better performance out of applications where are doing many, many different operations
yes.
at the same time, so more better parallel performance?
Yes, in terms of the switching between threads or tasklets in my terminology is so cheap that you can write algorithms which you wouldn't write with threading because switching is so expensive. So you use that feature for lots of things, and you spawn tasklets for tiny tasks anytime.
Can you give us another example? You know, you've already given us a game example. Another example of an application or a use for Stackless Python.
Yes, I'm using it for changing the program structure of callback patterns. I don't like the reactive pattern from the Twisted language, for instance. You can use Stackless to turn that upside down because your client program becomes something like a main program again because it has control. You don't have 50 handlers for 50 messages. You have one that can switch and it has a location in the program flow. So you get back to a normal coding style.
Excellent. Okay, I mean, you're here at PyCon UK. Were you at EuroPython?
I was at EuroPython as well, and we'll go to the next PyCon in US as well.
So, I mean, since you're going to all the conferences, there seem to be more conferences now than there used to be, and Python's getting more visible to the public world. Do you think this is a good thing?
It's a good thing, and I always was a Python evangelist, and so if more people are interested, I will go to more talks as long as I can afford it. So 3 or 4 conferences in a year is okay.
I have a question about you, specifically you. What you're working on sounds pretty intense, technically very, you know, very technical and complicated and all the rest of it.
Well, the PyPy stuff is much more intense, but
okay, so you've got more intense stuff.
Okay. Relaxing.
I mean, what is it about hacking on that kind of stuff that gets you interested? What gets you excited about that kind of work? Because it sounds pretty hardcore.
Why I do that?
What gets you excited about that kind of work?
There was some previous work from Stephen Majewski in 1997 about implementing generators in Python, and he ended up with the conclusion, this is impossible. And other people told me as well, this is impossible. So I really wanted to find out, can I make the impossible, can I change truth? So it was really...
Okay, so you want to make the impossible possible.
Yes.
Christian Jesma, doing the impossible every day.
that's pretty impressive. So we were talking earlier on about how my laptop has a good battery life. And we were saying how it might be nice if my laptop runs on fresh air. Is it possible for you to make my laptop run on fresh air instead of...
That sounds like an interesting project. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you think it's possible?
Fantastic.
Being slightly serious here, one last question. Python 3.0, do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
After all, I think it's a good idea, although I dislike the disappearance of the print statement.
Hooray! Good move.
But actually, it's interesting. Python 3000 always has been the big bin where threw all the crap into he wouldn't like to cope with. And now Google caught him and say, hey, we want you to implement that. So it's really going to happen. And it's going to be the big chance to write even better Python, getting rid of old stuff. So I'm excited to see Python 3000 come up, and I'm pretty sure that PyPy will follow as well.
Cool.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Cool.
Excellent.
Well, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Have a good conference.
Bye-bye.
On the show now, we've got Simon Willison, who's heavily involved in Django. So tell us what Django is, apart from the fact that it's named after a Spanish musician.
French musician, actually. French gypsy
really?
Jazz guitarist.
Ha, you suck. Yeah.
Is that Django Reinhardt?
Django Reinhardt.
Django
yeah.
Reinhardt. Ah, so fuck you, Langridge.
I knew who it was.
You've been getting
it after.
Ah, but you insinuated that I didn't know.
You said he was Spanish.
Well, they're all bloody the same. All classical musicians are all basically the same.
So anyway, tell us about Django.
Okay, so Django is a Python web framework for... What do we call it? We call it web development for perfectionists on journalism deadlines. In fact, I just muffed the tagline.
You did, you did.
Yeah, let me try that again.
You just what?
I muffed the...
Carry on.
It's a web framework for...
perfectionists with deadlines.
Perfectionists with deadlines. Okay.
Says the perfectionist. Carry on.
Says the perfectionist, yeah. I didn't
carry on. This is going in the show, so yes. Carry on. Okay.
Simon's given out a body language of stop it recording.
Yeah, they're merciless here. Okay, Django is a web framework which came out of a local newspaper in Kansas, which is quite an interesting thing, I think. It's been open source for about 2 years, and its targeted aim is to let you build database-driven websites really quickly, but without doing a bodge job of it, and stuff that you can actually deploy on the internet and have lots of people use.
Right. And who's the primary authors behind it?
So, Django, it was co-created, I guess, by myself and Adrian Holovaty, who people may have heard of from ChicagoCrime.org and various other projects that he's been involved in.
ChicagoCrime.org?
I must admit that I'm a real fan of Chicago Crime. So.
Well, this is... you're just not Web 2.0, are you?
Because you sell drugs.
Chicago Crime
was essentially the first mashup. This was when Google Maps came out, and they didn't have an API, but everyone was playing with it and thought it was really cool. And somebody reverse engineered Google Maps and figured out how to like show maps on your own pages. And then Adrian took the reverse engineered code and combined it with data from the Chicago Police Department's truly horrible website, which he scraped it all in, and he built this site where you could navigate a map of Chicago and see all of the crimes that had been committed and filter by things
wicked.
Like yeah, it was great. It's like if you want to buy cocaine in Chicago, you go to Chicago Crime, you say, excellent, show me where everyone got busted for selling cocaine, and there it is.
Right, excellent.
So well it's down the road.
yeah, exactly. But so he built that, and actually that was the first site using Django outside of the newspaper where it was invented.
So this was this Django was essentially set up to allow this guy to find cocaine more easily in Chicago.
I'm sure he wouldn't put it like that. He does love
That's
Chicago.
That's not a very nice thing to say about him, Simon.
And indeed,
Adrian, is, Adrian is clean and squeaky as a button.
You know, we were talking about how we wanted a Slashdot headline every so often. I think we've got it.
Adrian Holavati, coke for him. Django Hacker.
This has not gone well. So
God, really slightly nicer to him.
Really,
now.
Django came out of frustration with PHP, as with so many of these things. Adrian and I had both been working with PHP for years, and we got to the point you get with PHP where you're building big, complex sites with it, but suddenly the language isn't helping you so much as getting in your way, and you spend a lot of your time just working around its limitations.
Right.
So I went out to Kansas for a year to work for this local newspaper on an industrial placement from university, mainly because I knew Adrian from his blog and stuff. He sold me on this job at a local newspaper in Kansas, okay, being really exciting, which was quite an achievement, really. And so I came out, and we both agreed very quickly that we didn't want to write stuff in PHP anymore. We wanted to use Python. We both liked Python, but at the time, and this was for about 3.5 years ago, there weren't really any good options for web development in Python the way we wanted to do it. There were a few web frameworks out there, but they were many and scattered, and nothing quite fit the bill. So we tried to avoid building our own web framework, because reinventing the wheel is a bad thing, and accidentally did it anyway. And the nice thing,
at least you're honest about it.
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't mean to build a web framework, but we did. What was really nice about it is I worked there for a year, and then I came back to England and finished my degree and stuff. And in the meantime, Django, which was this closed source thing at this newspaper, was getting bigger and better. And Adrian and Jacob Kaplan Motz, who was hired just before I left, had taken on the sort of lead roles developing it. And they made this really cool thing, and then managed to convince the newspaper to open source it. So Django was released as open source just over 2 years ago. And I think it's been a real open source success story, in as much as what can you expect from a local newspaper in Kansas to get out of open sourcing things? But I think they've hired 5 developers directly out of the Django community.
I remember first hearing about Django and reading that it came from this Kansas newspaper thing. I thought, that's really weird, because I can't imagine anything productive coming out of the Express and Star in Wolverhampton, you know? It's kind of like, it seems a very unusual thing, but it's interesting how these little things kind of come from nowhere.
To be honest, it was a very unusual newspaper, in that most of the local newspapers in the US are owned by two or three of these massive conglomerates, and they're all like cookie-cutter newspapers with terrible websites, and they basically republish like global news from the newswires and don't really do much other than that. Whereas this newspaper in Kansas, it was called the Lawrence Journal World, and it's owned by a local family who became fabulously wealthy about 20 years ago, I think, selling their cable company to one of the big cable cos. So they've got loads of money, and they invest it in supporting the local community. So you've got a local newspaper that's actually locally owned, and the aim of the paper is to enhance the community as opposed to just make lots of money, which meant that they could then throw a bunch of resources at the website. So you've got this tiny little town of 100,000 people with, when I joined, about a dozen people working directly on the websites, which is pretty much unprecedented.
Yeah.
And 2 developers as well.
So essentially Django comes out of they're supporting the community because that's what they do, rather than because they wanted a website. It's more about
an extension.
Well, they wanted the best local newspaper website in the United States, really. So they hired some really great people. In particular, the guy who was running the website stuff was a guy called Rob Curley, who was full of completely crazy ideas and was perfectly willing to hand them over to the developers and then get out of the way. So we had a lot of leeway to build things however we wanted to. If we wanted to use Python, that was fine, just as long as we built the stuff that needed to be built.
So, talking about Python, do you think in the Django community, Django users, not necessarily the Django hacking community, but people out there using Django for sites and applications, do you think most of them are motivated by the fact that it's Python, the fact that it's open source, the fact that it's easy to work with?
That's a really good question.
All of the above, none of the above, any combination
thereof?
There's definitely
a major combination. A lot of people come to Django because they like Python, and Django is... I think Django is the most popular of the current batch of Python web frameworks.
It is. TurboGears has dropped away now. There's not really a lot else unless you count the Pylons.
Well, Pylons is making a lot of headway, but Django's a good... Yeah, I'm nice about the competing frameworks. There's a lot to like about Pylons. But Django, for a Python program, it's a really good option for building a website. But we're seeing a remarkable number of designers coming to Django, which I never expected. There's nothing in Django that says you don't need to be able to program to use this. But I think what happened is a couple of really high-profile designers in the web sort of standards community, people like Wilson Miner and Jeff Croft, who were involved in Django, both worked at the Journal World at one point or another. They started building stuff with Django using the fact that because Django has this admin interface that automatically builds a back end for your site, you can write very small amounts of code to generate a site that you can just use to get data in a database, and then do everything else in the template language. So designers who'd previously hacked movable type to do anything on Earth were now discovering they could hack Django to do just enough stuff that they needed to. So we've actually got a lot of people who aren't programmers who started with Django, which blows me away. I really wouldn't have thought that was a good idea, but it is.
Final question then, before we send you back off to talks or what have you. There are more than one person has suggested that Django is just a shameless copy of Rails, and it's just there because people wanted something like Rails but don't like Ruby or don't like DHH or whatever.
Yeah, this
is not a new criticism. Uh-huh. Do you think that Django has now differentiated itself sufficiently from Rails that people aren't thinking that as much anymore?
So, I mean, historically, actually, Django and Rails started development as closed source projects at the same time. So I remember when Ruby on Rails was open source, which was about 6 months before Django, I looked at it, I was like, hey, all of the design decisions we made, or not all of them, but a lot of the design decisions we made have been duplicated here, which means we were right. I mean, we were obviously onto something if this thing developed independently has worked so well. I mean, these days, there's always been a healthy interaction between the Django and Rails communities. We swap ideas, we go to each other's conferences and things. And I think Django's always been differentiated in terms of people think of Rails as a web application platform and Django as a website content management platform, which originally was sort of true, but these days they've both converged to the point where they can essentially do the same things. So I don't know. I mean, I'd recommend if somebody knows Ruby and likes Ruby, then I think Rails is probably a better choice than from Django, unless they're doing sites like newspaper sites which really benefit from it. But at the same time, we're seeing quite a few people come to Django from the Rails community, especially people who care about things like performance and memory overhead and stuff.
Stick the boot into the Rails wager! Yes, indeed. So, thank you to Twitter for that, sponsoring that last comment.
No, to be fair, Twitter is scaling great, and they're still on Rails. They are now. It took them a while to get there.
After they blew up the whole internet complaining about it. But yeah. Okay.
Great stuff. So, thank you very much for coming on the show once, and thank you for your constant involvement, apart from this year at Lug Radio.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I think I need to...
Hang on.
Didn't you end up wearing my thong?
I believe it wasn't your thong. I sourced it independently, but thank you very much to you, and I think the whole Lug Radio community has much to be angry with you for. Thank you very much for not doing the gonga thong, and therefore having me being your substitute. Thank you very much.
No problem at all.
Thanks a lot, Simon.
Cheers, Simon.
Okay, we're talking to Zeph Green, part of the illustrious PyCon PyCon Administration Committee. Or how would you describe yourselves?
Yeah, that'll do. PyCon UK Committee.
So I appreciate we're not all that long away into the conference yet, but how do you think it's going so far?
Good, yeah. No major disasters yet. Good fun.
So what motivated you? What made you think what we need is a UK Python conference?
We hate Perl.
We hate Ruby. No.
Because no one cares about Perl anymore. Everyone just hates Ruby.
Hating Perl's a given.
Okay. Yeah, everyone stopped hating Perl in 1999.
we started a Python West Midlands user group. And we also visited a user group called London Python. And we thought it would be good to get everybody together. So we thought, there should be at least 50 people who'd want to come down and talk about Python. That was our original ambition.
Cool. I mean, how many people Are there a couple of hundred?
Yeah, 205 registered this morning. A few people have come on the door. But
excellent.
So what's your involvement in the organisation and who else is involved in the organisation crew?
Okay, I'm the vice president of the committee. We have John Pinner, who's the president who makes sure everyone else is there. Yeah, as a bit, yeah. Uses KDE. We've got Michael Sparks, who works for the BBC, he's from Manchester.
Right.
We have a woman called Gail Ollis. We have a Alex Wilmer. Who you probably know from Orslug.
Yeah, we know Alex Wilmer.
Quentin Wright from Colflug.
The Q man.
Yeah, that's about it, I think. That's the we've got quite a few people involved in the crew in their purple shirts.
You have very nice job titles like president and what were you again?
Vice president.
Yeah,
vice president.
I wanted to be Grand High Moff, but they didn't allow it.
So what have you done, and how has the work kind of been divided up into everybody?
I've basically
done fuck all.
I've basically arranged the session chairs and the speakers,
right.
And the audio, and some of the food.
Right.
The takeaways last night when the chef didn't turn up.
So what was your goal for PyCon UK? I mean, if you had a mission statement, you got titles of president and vice president, you've got a mission statement, what is it?
Have you got a company handbook?
Health and safety policy?
We've got a constitution.
Have you actually?
Yeah, we've got a constitution, yeah.
Are you joking?
On our page.
Why?
I don't know. It's something to do with the bankers.
I don't know, but we need one.
The bankers like it.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. Yeah. That men should like Python, and not Perl, and not Ruby, and we hate Rails. Oh no, didn't mean to say that.
Oh, and buy a laptop from the Linux Emporium.
No, I mean, seriously, what? If you had to boil down why you're doing this, how if you wanted people to go away from this conference and say, it was like this, your perfect sentence for what they'd say, what would it be?
Well, I mean, hopefully everyone had a good time. There's been introductory tutorials, so some people have learnt Python for the first time.
Great.
This weekend. There's been a lot about Django and web frameworks. This time, hopefully everybody will go back and improve their websites.
Yeah. Incidentally, just for our listeners, Langridge was staring knowingly at Willison, who's behind us.
Who's sitting in the background waving his Django flag frantically.
That sounds disgusting.
But yes. Okay, cool. Do you think you've achieved your goal thus far?
Yeah, so far, yeah. Everybody's enjoying themselves. If people are listening and they want to come back next year, then do that. We'll hopefully do it again next year.
I know you've got quite big plans for PyCon in the UK, so why don't you tell us what you're thinking of doing over the next couple of years?
Well, the plan is for... The first year was kind of the first time we've done it, kind of a practice in a way. And then next year we do it again, the big one for the whole UK. And then hopefully afterwards we can bid for EuroPython and get all the Python programs from Europe into Birmingham. That's the aim.
That sounds cool.
We've had quite a few people come already from Sweden and from one guy from Texas and a couple of people from elsewhere in Europe. So this year already.
And one final question: is your name actually Seth, but you wanted to make it sound cooler by calling yourself Zeth?
No, it is Zeth. There's a long story about that, but you're probably not interested. But
yes,
that sadly is.
I am interested.
Sadly, this is a very short show.
No.
We need to hear this.
Tell us why your name.
Why are you called Zeth?
Basically, my I had an older sister called Zoe,
and she really likes Scrabble.
Yeah. And okay. My
sorry, carry on.
And my mother wanted to call me Zach, but my father really wanted to call me Seth because they lost the child before me. So
right.
The idea is that Seth is the replacement. But so I looked through a name book and they argued and they found Zeth was a compromise.
It's a very cool name, to be honest.
It's
not
good.
As cool as Jono, but it's very cool.
It's good. Whenever you go, you're the only ever Zeth. You never have to use your last name. I can be like Madonna. You never have to use your last name.
What, as in you to take a toilet seat off before you play a gig?
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
No, what?
Yeah, apparently Madonna is so freaked out about... somebody taking her toilet seat and eBaying it, that whenever she does a gig, she takes the toilet seat off and puts her own seat on there and takes a toilet seat between different gigs.
So, Mr. Green, moving on from there, do you do that?
No, although I do actually, you know, bring some kind of cleaner and, you know, put toilet roll across. this is
well,
Birmingham after all.
Thank you very much for organising PyCon, you fucking weirdo.
Box seats of the rich and famous. And Zeth as well.
Okay, excellent. Thanks very much.
Thanks
Zeth
very
Green.
Much, Seth.
Thanks for having us.
That was PyCon UK 2007.
Yeah.
What did people think of it?
Yeah, it was all right.
damning them with faint praise there, Mr. Bacon.
Yeah, it was good. I think the talks, the conference, the organisation, pretty solid.
Yeah. A lot of people here, which vaguely surprised me, I have to admit. I think it vaguely surprised
what
the audience.
What, you expected no one?
The organisers didn't expect a lot of people.
I'll be honest with you, they said what, 205 people on the day?
Yeah, you need to stop shouting into the microphone.
I think
it was shouting into the microphone.
I've turned you down now. Carry on.
Yeah, I think it was about 205 pre-registered, and they had a few extra people turn up on the door.
So they got over 200 people. I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
That's good for a first year as well.
For a first year,
and
absolutely.
As Zeth said, you just said it. It's the first year, and this is effectively the prototype for perhaps next year, and they're hoping to do Euro PyCon in about 2 years' time. So
yeah, no, that'd be. I really like the fact that more of this stuff is happening in the UK. Because I hate the fact that loads of conferences happen in the bloody US.
That's just because you're tight.
Yeah, actually, it is, because I don't want to take 2 extra days of holiday. I don't get paid
some
to go
of
to conferences,
don't
remember.
Pay us to,
I mean, it's
suck a dick, Bacon.
Little bit of anger there, I think. Jealousy's not your nice side.
Jimbo, Jono, Jet Set, fucking Bacon. Travelling to fucking Brazil every 6 weeks. I'm very sorry to interrupt your life and make you sit in the UK for more than 20 minutes.
But to get back to the point, it's not just about me having to take less holiday. I mean, I think the UK's a good place to have this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
well, obviously, if we can get 200 people to a Python conference in its first year, it's obviously quite popular, you know.
Just imagine how many people you get to an actually popular conference.
I mean, you've got to ask the question. I mean, I'm not wanting to kind of piss on their bonfire, but does it actually demonstrate popularity of the conference, or does it demonstrate popularity of Python? Because you get the impression a lot of people have been hankering for a Python conference in the UK, so they are going to be willing to travel from... I mean, from looking at the delegate list, it seems like the vast majority of people are from the UK.
Yes.
So you get the impression that people are really willing to travel a long distance to kind of come.
Oh,
and I mean, that demonstrates popularity to a degree. I have absolutely no doubt in the fact that this could be easily double the size next year.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I can see that. And
they're going to have learnt so much.
It's good for Python.
Well, the thing is, you know, it's like, at least at this conference, they managed to organise it decent, unlike Gwadek, which was pretty shit and badly run.
I think that's being very unfair. We ought to point out to, you know, people other than the four of us sitting here, that Paul Cooper, Gwadek organiser, is sitting next to us here at PyCon.
Making very insulting hand gestures at Jono at the moment.
Presumably you were just talking about Thomas Wood's bit of the organisation there.
Yeah, he fucked it up. Him and Bastian fucked it up. Paul did a great job. Got nothing to do with the fact that it's sat there. But yeah, I mean, it's been pretty good. There was a catastrophic lack of chicken nuggets at lunch.
Shut up about the chicken nuggets. I mean, the thing I thought was interesting is meeting Christian Tisma.
Tis was.
Because he's talking about Stackless, which I thought was a cool idea when he came up with it about 5 years ago.
He scares me.
He's pretty hardcore, but then there were quite a few hardcore people. It's a very hardcore technical conference.
Well, he's the kind of person that when you talk to him, he's decompiling your brain through your eyes.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he's stunningly hardcore, but really nice chap. I really enjoyed doing that interview with him. So.
I think they have quite a mix of people here. I mean, there was a talk on beginning Python or something.
Is that I was going to ask about that?
Earlier on, there was like the first thing Saturday morning, there was a introduction to Python.
I think I wanted to see that actually, because I can't program for shit. And I think me and Baker were actually sitting in Starbucks at the time.
This is true. Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to kind of see things more, that kind of stuff, for beginning. Yeah. I suppose these conferences are generally designed for the enthusiasts.
The thing that I think's interesting about this Python conference specifically is I tend to think of Python as a component of the open source world and the open source desktop, open source servers. But half the people here, I think, don't care about it being open source. They're using Python because it's a good technical solution. The fact that it's open source is basically irrelevant to them. They're building proprietary products on top of it. They're using it fine. It would never occur to them. They don't think of themselves as part of the open source community in any way. I mean, take Giles, who we interviewed earlier. I mean, they're building a commercial product to sell to banks
with Python. But they're not. It's not open source. They're not thinking of making it open source. They're not participating in the open source community. They're just building a product, and they happen to be using Python. Now, ignore the fact that I think all software ought to be free. That's got to be a good thing to get open source languages into that kind of environment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One thing I was thinking of the other day was, you know, Python's kind of has become a de facto kind of the de facto high level language in many ways in the open source world. I mean, obviously I'm biased towards Ubuntu, but Python is kind of like the language of choice in Ubuntu. It is with Fedora as well, I believe. And I'm not sure what the situation is with SUSE. I'm not sure if they have a preference towards Python or another high level language.
Mono.
You know.
Yes. They're doing a lot of C#.
Of course, yeah. Well, is that with is that the same with OpenSUSE as well as SLED?
I believe so, yes.
Haskell with Linspire.
Fucking Haskell, shut up. But yeah, I mean, we're now getting to the stage where if there's a library or something, it's still quite likely to be written in C, but if there are bindings to other languages at all, the bindings are likely to include Python bindings. The only exception are mono things.
Yeah.
If you look at FSpot, for example, if you want to write an FSpot extension, it has to be a mono thing.
Yeah.
But broadly, if there's a set of bindings to any languages, one of the languages is likely to be Python.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So, good conference all in all, I think. It's good to see Josette again. You know, she's always at the
Every conference everywhere.
Josette sells the O'Reilly books, Lug Radio Live.
First name terms with everyone in the entire open source community, isn't she?
She's basically everyone's mum, isn't she? I mean, I think of her as my mum, you know?
She's lovely.
She's lovely, and
ignoring the fact that I had to rescue Josette from a car park she trapped herself in at Lug Radio Live. Sorry, Josette.
Yes,
it's
okay.
All good. So, yeah, good show, and well-organised PyCon people. So that's PyCon.
Yeah, it's been a good conference. It's been fun.
I think it's been very well run. There's a lot of talks. There seems to be a real buzz in the air from the delegates.
Yeah,
so.
Different atmosphere to other conferences we've been to, but yeah. Good fun.
It's been very technical, but you'd expect that, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a place for technical conferences just as much as there is for social ones.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I believe that they want to run it again in the future, and
yeah, no,
that's something that should be actively encouraged. If nothing else, the fact that they've done a good job, and we need a decent Python conference in the UK. So I mean, it's
completely agree with
it's,
you.
It's nice to have it.
The more conferences, the better. It gives us something to.
Well, it gives us less time to work.
well, what we ought to say at this point is thank you very much to the PyCon team for inviting us.
Absolutely,
yeah, definitely.
And we'd love to be involved next year as well.
We would, yes. Lug Radio, we are available for children's parties and to cover your conference's media partners. And bar mitzvahs. So, yes, thank you very much for inviting us.
So let's move on. Let's talk about Guadec.
Guadec
actually happened a while back, but we've been wanting to do a conference special so we can bring Guadec and PyCon together. Guadec was a fantastic conference, wasn't it?
It was.
It was, I mean...
GNOME Conference 2007. The interesting thing about Guadec is that you get to see all the people who are kind of heroes, you know. You think, wow, my God, that's Alex Gravely with his ridiculous bobble hat on.
Or if you mean you'd have to wander around going, who?
What?
Yeah. Maybe I should read up on the...
Bloody black box user, or whatever it is you are.
Window maker.
Really?
Yeah.
Window maker?
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Did you fall asleep in 1993, like fucking Buck Rogers?
I like window managers that don't use all of my RAM.
I like window managers.
Manage
my Windows.
Yeah, exactly. Therefore, you use Window Maker.
You take managing Windows to the literal, don't you? It only should manage my Windows, provide nothing else.
Yeah, none of this window border shit. That's for the week.
Right.
Anyway, you haven't used
FTW
it.
FTW for the week.
FTWM.
I think I may have mentioned before, but fuck you, and fuck you.
Okay, right. Let's get on with it.
So it's halfway through the week at Guadec.
Is it Wednesday?
I've
kind of lost track of time here, depends what day the week begins. But yes, we are halfway through the week here at Guadec, so what do you think so far?
It's been an interesting experience. It's my first proper kind of official IT conference, Lug Radio really doesn't count.
Lug Radio Live certainly does count.
Oh, this is a bitter source of disagreement in the Lug Radio.
There will be fighting later.
There will be weak fighting later.
There will be handbags later.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's... I'm moving a knob on a track on the mixing desk that doesn't actually have a microphone plugged into it.
Intelligent. So, have you actually seen any talks that you enjoyed? Sorry, that came out rather more negatively than I expected it to be. Which talks have you enjoyed?
Definitely the F-spot with Larry Ewing. Really lots of cool stuff he's been showing. He's been adding to the talk.
What's the signal for speaking to the microphone?
Right,
I'm not holding the microphone.
Hold the microphone, then.
I didn't see the F-spot talk.
Yeah, it was really cool because he was showing loads of stuff he's been adding to F-spot and playing with lots of cool little tricks. Best of all was his photo book, which enabled you to actually play with photographs. And at the moment, I don't think it actually prints out, but he's actually expanding it so it can use things like comic books and was it a scrapbook and right. A few other things.
So it's cool. For constructing essentially a book of photos.
That's part of it, but he's got loads of other features inside F-spot, like the magnifying glass and things like that.
I didn't attend his talk, but I saw Larry at Linustag, and well, we did this keynote thing next to him, next to each other, and I think he was a little bored because he kept playing with F-spot on his laptop. Not keynote, like a panel debate sort of thing. And he was playing with some of this stuff in F-spot. It looked incredible. I mean, it's a really nice piece of software as F-spot.
Hang on, I assume this isn't actually released, but is it available in F-spot SVN, or is it all just on Linustag drive?
I think some of it might be in SVN, because he was talking about one of the guys who's done the Summer of Code has done some of the work, so I assume some of it's cool. In SVN.
Funkai.
Yes, I can't remember his name, unfortunately. But, yeah, probably some of it's on Laurie's hard drive.
It's pretty cool. I mean, have you seen anything, Mr. Stuart Largefridge?
The thing I wanted to see before I came along was the stuff about ePaper. It's a phone called E-Ink, which do...
E-Ink?
Display technology. But the idea behind it, it's black and white, but you put an image on it, and then the image just stays there. Permanently, which means it's got incredibly low battery life, and it's much higher resolution than screens.
Was that in the warm-up days?
It was in the warm-up days,
right?
Yes. And Sony did a device with this stuff called the Libreye book reader,
yep.
and there's a phone called iRex, and they came in and did the talk, and the thing they built is all Linux under the covers.
Have you ever looked at
yes.
one of the devices?
I have.
It's pretty stunning stuff,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is.
It does actually look like
It's a lot more... The advantage behind it, because the screen's not backlit, because the stuff's actually there rather than being projected like LCD screens are, you can read it in any light. Like, you can read paper in any light.
Mm.
And it's not totally fucking dark.
I was going to say.
Obviously.
Very little light. I mean, it's a bit of a pain in the ass.
It's... Yeah, but it's a lot easier to read a paper in bad lighting conditions than it is to read a screen unless the screen's backlit.
Mm, yep.
And if the screen's backlit, then it eats power.
Yeah.
Was it... Did you actually saw this talk? I saw one of the devices sort of kicking around. Somebody had
yeah.
them. Yeah, it really just looked like sort of writing on kind of paper. Yeah, it looks kind of as you would...
Yes.
It like fresh write on it was actually really, really slow.
Well,
so it was like, well...
That's the thing behind it.
So it's like turning a page, but it would be useful for the screen.
It's because yes. they've got lots of very tiny, tiny little leprechauns inside it, and it takes them a little while to kind of put the ink on the paper.
That's an absolutely perfect description of it, apart from the word leprechaun should probably be molecules. I don't want to go into detail about how the thing works. I mean, I write up a thing about the book reader that I want to buy, and this is kind of most of the way there. The hard thing is the display technology, and that's
the only question that really does spring to mind is why not just buy a book? But apart from that, it was a fantastic idea.
There are three reasons why not to buy a book. First of all, if I'm on the train, I can't buy a book because I'm on the train.
Well, you can't buy a book reader either, but so you buy it beforehand and take it with you on the train.
Yeah, that analogy pretty much falls in its arse.
No, because once I've got one book reader, I don't have to buy a book again. Every time I need a new book, I need to buy one, and I'll be on the train.
Surely you still need to add new content to your book reader?
Yeah, but you just fetch it.
So in the same way as just fetching a book?
No, you fetch it over the air, you know.
So is
networks
this...
you might have come across them at some point.
Oh, so you can just fetch them on a train, is that what you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, you put a mobile phone inside it. You see the spec if you like. Oh, sorry, I didn't realise that you'd already thought about this and dismissed it. Shut the fuck up.
So essentially...
That was Axe, I've got my knickers in a twist voice. It comes on occasionally.
Essentially these things connect to... the internet somehow via your mobile or via kind of built-in Wi-Fi or something,
yeah, or something.
And you can just sort of log on to www.ebooks.whatever.
Yeah, that's what
I would like to buy. That's not what the current ones do. They're kind of there's a USB port on the side or whatever.
Is there a limited repository for all these books and stuff, or is it just anything off the net?
You can put anything on there. They can display HTML, PDFs, loads of different formats. So whatever you can get on there, the current implementations, whatever you can get on there, you can display. Other talks then.
Well, I sat in on the telepathy talk, and it was nothing majorly new for me. I've had my eye on the project for a while, and it's pretty cool to see stuff happening in it. Chikosha got mentioned, which is always important.
It always was, yes. We like Chikosha being mentioned.
I mean, you know, sort of separating ourselves away from, you know, the bias that is being part of the Chikosha team. Chikosha is one of the major implementations of some of this stuff that's going on, and it kind of shows what's possible.
This is the work that
LEO, summer code work that's Michael Sheldon's doing. Other than that, I sat in the... I think we were all in Havoc's keynote.
I wasn't, but yeah.
All right. And that raised a number of things, which I thought were quite interesting. Other than that, I haven't really been in any talks. I mean, I've been spent most of my time talking to people out on the main floor.
Communitizing the community.
You know, there's a certain amount of communitizing the community with community tools, which needs to be done. Fucking Reziak counted the number of times I said community when I did my keynote.
Bastard. How many was it?
It was like 18 times in an hour, so fuck him.
I'll fill him into the community-ometer.
But yeah.
Should have had the Lug Radio bingo on hand.
Havoc's talk was interesting in the fact that he was talking about the online desktop and he demoed Mugshot, and I think it was one of the first times that some people actually understood what Mugshot was all about and how applications on the desktop connect to sources of data on the internet, and that was good. But when he was questioned, he got some questions, you know, concerns about this kind of approach, and I found his responses weren't particularly compelling. He didn't, I'm assuming there's going to be video of it, and it's caused a lot of discussion, but I didn't feel like he gave particularly responses to some of the concerns. It was kind of like, that happens.
I think kind of part of what he was talking about, part of what he was doing a lot of the kicking about in the questions was basically he was saying, get rid of word processors and we'll all use Doodle, whatever the Doodle word processor thing
Google Docs and spreadsheets.
It was interesting.
And he was doing a bit of a kicking for that, essentially, because...
Because one person said... you're talking about open source and all the rest of it, but essentially this is just going to be a means to run proprietary web applications. It's a means of running proprietary web applications, which I was thinking, actually...
And giving all your data to Google the other stuff. You know.
And Havoc's response as well, I'm pretty sure that, people can have that ideology, but I'm pretty sure you will use them, which is a reasonable response, but still doesn't get away from
it. I mean, people are talking about an open services definition to go along with the open source definition. I mean, part of the problem is that I think there's a lot of awareness out there, there's this kind of uneasy symbiosis between stuff on the web and stuff on the desktop and how they all hook together. But no one's really managed to, A, define the problem, and B, define a solution yet. So it's all very exploratory. Mugshot kind of fits into that slot, but part of the reason that no one really understands what Mugshot's about is that it's deliberately not well defined, because we don't really understand the problem. It's just there's stuff on the web and there's stuff on the desktop and it's confusing.
That was actually the thing I found most interesting about his talk. It was the fact that I actually think a lot of what he was talking about was rubbish, but at least he's managed to define the problem.
Yeah.
He's actually had said, here's an implementation, what's wrong with it, what's right with it, where should we be going? And I think that's going to be the value of it, rather than actually what he was doing in itself, is the fact that he's actually managed to sit down and define the problem in a way, and now everybody is going, I thought that was rubbish, and I thought it was rubbish because...
Yeah, absolutely. So you're now at the stage where people can say, okay, now we've got Mugshot. I don't like the way Mugshot solves it. It should solve it this way, rather than going, well, there's something... We still need to do something in this area and not really know what it is.
Yeah. To my mind, he was actually talking about an application and people trying to shoot down the application, whereas in actual fact, I think he's trying to talk about the concept of what it is, which I find interesting.
It's like the glue in some ways, mainly what he's...
He's using Mugshot as an example of how you could implement this idea, but I think it's the idea he was actually trying to convey.
The thing I found interesting about his talk was, the concept of the online desktop and all that kind of stuff, I think is fascinating, and I think it's an interesting approach, and there's a lot of value in that approach, because a lot of what he said really does make a lot of sense. Some of the concerns, I'm sure he's got, this is Havoc Pennington, I'm pretty sure that he's got very, very detailed, drawn-out discussion reasons why this is working this way, and responses to the concerns. He must just get these questions all the time. But the thing I like about Havoc, and this reiterated an aspect of what I talked about in my keynote was the fact that he's talking about the project working together to move forward as one. And if anyone can help push that kind of mentality, it's Havoc Pennington. Because just you get such a warm response. It's because he doesn't say a lot, but when he does say stuff, it's incredibly wise.
Motivational.
It's stunning. And the thing I like about him is that when he got up and spoke, he just him as a human being had this aura of intelligent, reasoned. He's the kind of person that you want leading the GNOME community and pushing in a direction that you know that we should.
Yeah, he'd obviously.
And I thought it was extremely inspiring to watch him speak.
He'd obviously sat down and he'd really thought it through, and he had a real kind of understanding of what he was trying to say.
Yeah,
he wasn't just making it up on the spot and kind of like we do.
It's stunning, and let's not forget the other dude who I forget his name. Brian.
Yeah, Clark. Brian Clark.
Yeah, and I mean the two of them I thought gave a pretty good talk. And the online thing to me is like something I was banging on about was the fact that we need to react to what's going on the internet, and that's essentially what Havoc's talking about, is reacting to the fact that Facebook recently has become a big thing for people, and MySpace has become a big thing for people, and Flickr has become a big thing, and the desktop needs to react to those technologies.
Absolutely.
And all the rest of it.
Three quarters of my Jackville talk is actually about the web and the desktop and how they fit together, and then there's like at the end they go, oh, by the way, here's Jackville 10.
And it seems to be a real strong theme throughout GWADEC and throughout GNOME, is that we're talking about voice over IP being merged into applications, we're talking about consistent data stores, and there's been, you know,
the computer is the network.
It's
completely right about that. Over 10 friggin' years, too, aren't
20. But I thought actually the one of the things about the Havoc talk that really brought things home to me was when I realised that, like, half an hour before that, we'd been trying to get onto Doodle Calendar and try and, you know, organise some stuff. And how long did it take us to fail to get onto Doodle Calendar? At least half an hour we spent failing at it. And at that point, you suddenly realise that the web desktop had a little bit of work to be done.
Hang on, your microphone.
Much
malfunctioning.
Much like every other web conference we've ever been to. The Wi-Fi's fucked.
Why can't conferences fix this? This is something we've been talking about. I mean, I can understand it to a degree for people like GWADEC, where it's fairly small. It's completely community focused, right? Shut up. It is.
House.
It is a community run thing. And one of the problems I find with GWADEC is that because it's in a new place every year, everyone seems to make the same approximate mistakes each year.
But there's no reason for that. I mean, coming from a background of being a YAPSI organizer from the Perl conference.
Yes, another Perl conference.
Absolutely. The same thing happens where Perl user groups all around Europe and now around the world actually do the same sort of thing as GWADEC, where it goes from country to country and it's a different set of organizers all the time. But there's a difference here, it feels, that the knowledge that previous organizers have doesn't get passed on. And doesn't get built up so that you get a better and better conference experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've had some similar things in the Ubuntu community where we're having people running Ubucons, which are these, get ready for it, community-focused events. Check it out. And to me, what's important is that some people are just naturally good at organizing events. You know, I'd say that two fine examples of this are Stuart Langridge and John O'Bacon,
cough.
As long as you don't want Wi-Fi at your conference, obviously.
We explicitly don't want Wi-Fi, so it's not a problem if it fails. It's not supposed to be there anyway.
And next year, Log Radio Live will be even better because we'll have an additional two helping hands that will actually, you know, help.
What's that, you two?
Well, you know, let's be honest. I kid. But to me it's like, if some people are very good at doing event kind of stuff, then there should be a means to transfer that knowledge between them, like what Barbie's talking about. To me it's like, it's not major things, it's little things. Like, one thing that's been said a lot about this GWADEC is that there's fucking no signs anywhere. And the thing is, I was talking to Bastian about this last night in the pub, that you concentrate on the speakers and you concentrate on the venue and you concentrate on all that kind of really important top level stuff, but when it comes to little things like signs, you always forget that kind of shit.
It's going to sound stupid, but it's like building stuff for the desktop.
Your fucking microphone.
Is my microphone not working?
Knackered.
Is that better? It's like building, you know, programs for the desktop. It's all the little bits that actually make people like stuff. You know, making sure that all the little problems are taken care of, even if the core stuff being quite as good because of
getting
it.
The infrastructure is right is one thing, but then there's actually the kind of the usability of the conference.
Absolutely, yeah. Conference usability. In fact, that'd be a good talk. Conference usability.
There's some lightning talks on later.
But yeah, I mean, it's you know, not wanting to turn this into a Lug Radio Live segment, but it's something that we've learned as we've done each year, that there's some stuff that you realise your own bottlenecks. I mean, particularly Ak and I realised that we were bottlenecks and stuff, so we wanted to figure out. So this is the first year we did it with the crew, and that was just an excellent approach. And I just thought that the same kind of thing would approximately happen with Guadec, because there was some. I mean, this is my third Guadec, and there's really good things about each of them and really bad things about each of them. Not one of them was particularly amazing. Not one of them was particularly bad. Yeah. And you'd think that there'd be a certain amount of collaboration in that regard. And I mean, the Gnome Foundation have got fuck tons of money, you know. It's like, use some of this money to
it's not necessarily money, it's more often it's just knowledge, things that went wrong, and passing on information of how to do things if something does go wrong, or things to have a list somewhere saying, like, do not forget these sort of things.
I think some of it also is in the I don't know whether it's the Gnome Foundation or the Guadec organisers, whatever, but in their defence, they have said more repeatedly over the last 6 months or so, we need people to volunteer to help us out with Guadec. Please volunteer to run a room or to help us out or to move stuff around. And they've not had that many. The reason we had the crew, we had, what, out of the 20 people on the crew, there were 5 or 6 volunteers, and the rest of them were people me and Jono knew who went around and batted on the head and said, be in the crew, you'll get in for free and get a t-shirt.
But that's the thing, is I can imagine, you know, taking it away from Guadec specifically, you imagine for most events, people will sort of say, come and help us, and they'll get no response, and that'll be, I think, oh, no one wants to help us. You do actually need to go out there. It's like,
you actually, that's the thing.
You go and bat to people.
There was no, I'm on the South Birmingham Lug mailing list, I'm on the Wolves Lug mailing list. Neither of them were contacted about, you know, we need people to run the rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as local kind of enthusiast people who are likely to come, there's a fair number of them around.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are the people who could run a room and quite happily and would be quite happy to let in for free, thank you very much.
But it's hard, and I think Guadec is, I think it's cool, you know, I think...
Yeah, sorry, we're giving them a slight in here, I think, and this is kind of like details.
Yeah, it's
we had, there was a, you know, how many, 7 days worth of really good talks, and kind of, they've got some big names, and, you know...
Yeah, I mean, this is a good conference, it's just little tiny things, but you can begrudge little tiny things.
I think this is more just making people aware, certainly sort of from like the foundation perspective, it's just to ensure there's continuity between conferences. It's not necessarily a group of organisers that are having problems, it's just having that continuity of experience. Because, like you say, I mean, there's great talks, great speakers here. And most people seem to be having a great time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The okay, so let's. This to drag on too long, but let's talk about some of the people that we've met while we've been here. I mean, any particular notable people that you've met, that you've got on really well with, that you've pissed you off? Not mentioning Carl.
Was going to give me some hubcaps, thankfully.
Very kind of him. I mean, a lot of people, because I was at Guadec last year as well, it's a lot of people are the same old faces.
Yeah.
I met Ian McKellar from Songbird, who I'd not met before.
Ian
the famous one from the Harry Potter films. Yeah.
Wow.
That's him. There he is.
He works on Songbird.
He works on Songbird. It's incredible.
Multi-talented.
But yeah, he was an interesting bloke. He used to work for a firm called Danger. How cool is
name.
That as a name? They made mobile phones. I was well impressed with that.
They explode in your pocket or something, wasn't it?
Disappointed. They used to be called... They're originally called Danger Research, but they decided that was too bad a name, and they changed it.
Yeah, he seems like a dude, that guy.
He was. I was quite surprised.
So,
I've never met anyone from Songbird at all.
No, I hadn't.
To say this has been my first Guadec, so this has been my first, first chance to meet a lot of these people, and there are actually a lot of really cool people around.
That's the one person who always impresses me is Aaron Bockover.
I have still not seen him. I've been here 4 days.
I have no idea who he is.
He's banshee. He's about 1 foot tall.
It's because you walk along the road and you think, okay, I'm going to go and try and find Aaron Bockover. I'm just going to walk past this collection of kids here.
He's actually one of them.
He kind of merges into the crowd, you know.
Him and Jerv look like 12-year-olds.
He's just so fucking talented. And I really like the Novell guys.
Joe Shaw.
Joe's fantastic as well.
He is.
Absolutely brilliant. It's good to see Robert Love again.
Now he's at Google. I suppose they let him out for the day.
and Nat as well. and it was good to see Nat at Lug Radio Live, and obviously to see him
Nat
here.
Friedman, yes. He's a lot taller than he sounds on the radio, I tell you.
He's a lot taller than he sounds. What?
You talk about him like he's like 3 foot high and 12. And he's actually like taller than me.
As far as I'm aware, when we talk about Nat Friedman, we either say he's got a lot of money or we accuse him of having an 80s haircut, which he's got, and that's it. He didn't like that crack, did he, at Lug Radio Live? No, he didn't. Sorry, anyway, moving on.
Yeah, sorry.
What freaked me out quite considerably was just before I did my talk on the core day. Federico Mena Quintero, man with the coolest name ever.
No.
It is the coolest name.
No, German Poo Commando wins, but Federico's second.
German Poo Commando. Federico came up to me and said, "Wow, it's really great to meet you." And I was like, "You're fucking Federico, man. This is the other way around. Yeah. You know? You're the co-fucking founders."
The other people who I thought were cool, most of whom I hadn't met, were the Open Hand guys.
Yeah.
They've got a table in, they've got a very, very, very tiny exhibition here at Guado.
Yeah.
And the Open Hand people have got all these really mad devices that they've managed to get Linux running on.
They're like another Zimian, aren't they? They're a company that employs cool people doing interesting things.
So yeah, I mean,
I like that.
And I didn't actually realise that their focus was on embedded.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah.
And they've got all these insane devices, and you think, well, here's this kind of weird device with this tiny screen in the middle, and then you look at it closer, and you think, that's bloody Gnome on that. That's amazing.
And Paul. Because Paul's going to work there, isn't he?
Are they the people with the robot dog, by chance?
No, that's Nokia.
Is it really?
Yeah.
What the fuck has that got to do with phones?
Which, remember, it has a phone
it's
for a
face.
It's
got an N800 bolted on the front.
Yeah.
I reiterate the question. What the fuck has that got to do with phones?
Why should we care? No. It's cool.
There is that.
The N800 isn't a phone.
Yeah, fucking bollocks. I mean, I know it's not a phone. It's an internet tablet, right?
Yeah, it's not a phone.
We like Nokia anyway. Because they're about to give Laszlo a free Nokia N800, aren't
they? Are. No, you
no.
can't.
And no, Adam Sweet, when you listen to this, you can't have one either.
That's what you get for not. That's what you get for not showing up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we do.
You don't know what if you do turn up. Go on.
Well, unlucky. but we did get on the subject of free stuff, a 2 gigabyte USB keyring from Mandriva, no less. I was disappointed to discover that my laptop won't actually boot from USB, even though it says it will. You put it in USB mode and it just ignores it. So, tragically, I haven't tried Mandriva.
And we tried it, I booted it on my laptop, which does boot from USB, and it was quite an experience, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, it was.
It's actually not bad, and
In a kind of, right, I've tried that now I get to wait another 10 years till 2017 before I have to try again.
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing majorly new, and it needed a decent road test to give it a fair opinion, but it just looked like a more garish version of Ubuntu. You know? It's like...
Yeah, it seemed to work kind of quite happily. To be fair on Mandriva, yeah, it seemed to work.
It was.
I can't think of any desperate reason why I'd want to install it.
Yeah,
but
rather than one of the others.
Although yeah. I think a lot of the stuff for them is like the club and all that kind of stuff that they seem to...
Yeah, and it comes with RealPlayer and Flash pre-installed and that sort of thing.
Yeah, woo. So, woo. The well, cynicism I mean, from the proctologist there.
The Lord of the Rings sneers at RealPlayer. See, well, I don't care. You know, but some people do.
So, okay. Yeah, it's been, so we're halfway through. I'm actually here for one more day, one and a half more days, possibly, because I've got to fly off. But you guys here for the, are you staying here for the full?
Yeah, I'm here until.
I'm not sure if I'm here from the Saturday, but.
Right. But we'll.
Let's go and find some people and shoot them and make them be interviewed.
Let's interview them, then shoot them.
That's probably the better way.
Okay, we talked to Kim Gill from Nokia.
Hi.
Kim, how are you finding Guadec?
Well, pretty relaxing compared to all the events I still recall. Yeah, pretty good.
So, have you actually had a chance to see any talks, or are you spending your whole time manning the Nokia stand with this little robot dog?
Well, it's not. There's still a third element, which is also the Gnome Foundation stuff. So actually, I have to say, as for today, I spend more time in meetings and chats than actually in sessions.
Right.
But well, because I try to be like a progressive guy, much better than last year. So perhaps I don't know. Perhaps next year I can go to sessions. Let's see.
So, I mean, in terms of, obviously, you were one of the primary organisers of Guadec last year. How does this feel different to you? I mean, how do you compare last year and this year? Instead of saying, this year's shit compared to when I did it, you know, what kind of things have you noticed that the guys have done really well this year, or things that could be improved, or what?
Well, the main difference I've seen actually go back to several months. The first day there were three guys. It's like...
Yeah.
So it's a lot already.
Yeah.
And my feeling is that since the very beginning, they have been playing as a team and they have shared responsibilities. So, yeah, perhaps... yeah, perhaps they have been like more humble in terms of less kind of rock star approach to the things, but they've done a lot of work, and I think they're doing pretty well.
Good stuff.
Okay. Excellent. So Nokia, obviously, there's quite a big Nokia presence here, and a lot of that's down to the N800. But what do you think that you've brought along that's particularly exciting? What has been the most interesting Nokia thing so far, Gwadek?
Well, we have been working a lot about things that we're targeting these days, and really, it's not like the Skype thing that, you know, the Nokia site, pure Nokia site that we released like a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
We're most in the open source mode, releasing versions, development versions of software that is not end user ready. So this also implies some changes. Or deepening some changes in the way Nokia usually has been working with software development. So for me, this is exciting. Even if from a open source hacker point of view, it's like obvious they have to do that. But really, it takes a lot of effort to get these small steps. And yeah, things like yesterday, Ari Jaksi, my boss, saying that Our code sucks compared to open source code the community develops.
Went down well, that one.
Yeah. So, well, it's something that I cannot go and say. Well, I can, but, you know. So those things, well, of course, it's not the literal message, but many, many things that I think that help us, getting people to understand much better what's all this project about.
So, I mean, with Nokia, I mean, where do you see things going? I mean, obviously, we've had the internet tablets, and they seem to have gone down pretty well certainly within the open source community. On a wider scale, where do you see the company kind of moving forward? Just in your particular opinion, where do you see it just be more kind of like embedded devices like that, or still doing mainly mobile phones?
So I came to, how was that? I came here for the freedom. this is why I joined the whole open source whatever. And I think that with Nokia, I think it's one of the big players that are going to bring all this whole stuff to a next level.
Right.
I don't think Nokia is going to be like the Pope of Freedom or something like that.
Yeah.
But in exchange of that, I think Nokia and this still small project can bring, all this open source stack and platform and many applications to really the mainstream.
The thing that stuns me about Nokia, which I think has impressed a lot of people, is that Nokia are really good citizens. You know, they're employing people to hack on open source code and things like MAMO and all that kind of stuff. I think it's gone down really well, and Nokia have been there to provide some funding towards other companies to allow this stack to come together. And I think it surprised a lot of people, because traditionally when people come into the open source space, they sometimes get it a bit wrong.
Yeah.
Whereas Nokia seem to have done a pretty good job.
Absolutely. Projects are being run in an open source kind of way, which is good. Cause you do expect that a big company is going to come in and think they can just kind of buy their way into the community. And it hasn't happened that way. It's been really good. And some of that's down to going to be, you know, the guys that are employing, like you.
I was just going to ask, obviously, sounds like the open source community is very happy with Nokia. How are Nokia feeling about the open source community? Are you getting what you want out of the arrangement as well, do you think?
Well, I think all in all, the relationship is not bad. I think it's getting better. I think it's about common understanding. So every side understands each other much better. About that thing you mentioned before, I think it's that Nokia really wants to make something big with that. I mean, Nokia doesn't do small things, basically.
Yeah.
It might take 1 year, 3 years, I don't know. But then when you do this big bet on a Linux-based platform with GNOME and all that, it is perfectly understandable that not even Nokia alone can push that. Or why push that alone when there's this big community that is not only like students, individuals, volunteers, there's also companies and small and big and everything.
Yeah.
And basically it's about collaborating and really having in mind what's really the competition and what's really the technical challenges, and really kick this off to, when I say a next level, it's really a next level. So,
cool.
Looking more towards the future, looking at the way Nokia has been perceived and how it's growing in terms of the communication market, is it likely to be something like a Novell kind of company where it's going to look at other open source initiatives and possibly buying them up or taking them under their umbrella and building a bigger empire, if you like, for the more communications platform? Novell have been very much more in the network side of things. But where do you think Nokia would take this from where they are now?
Well, I suppose the CEO of Nokia has a better answer for that. But my personal opinion, and I'll put it really graphical, is that, so what's the country Novell is based and what's the country Nokia is based? And I haven't seen Finland like building big empires. And I think it's the kind of, they've been actually surrounded by big empires and trying to deal as best as possible with them. So, and I think this, at some point, of course, well, Nokia is a global company. There's people, I mean, there's managers from many countries, many mentalities. Yeah. So I'm just simplifying the picture. But all in all, I think that, really, I don't think Nokia wants to have, this overall position that we are controlling everything. I think one sentence I've said, I've listened many times, is that we want to be a good citizen in the open source community. And I think that Nokia in general wants to be a good corporation, well, earning all their own profits and everything and more. This sense is a global corporation, no question about that. But really trying to play fair. I don't know how to explain that.
Cool. Okay, so if the position of Pope of Freedom comes up at Nokia, I'll send you my resume. But other than that, thank you very much, Kim Gale.
Yeah, thanks.
Can I show now Leonard Purdy Ring? Leonard Putty Ring.
Mr.
Bay. Nice.
So, Leonard's been working on Pulse Audio. Which is, and a few other attempts at replacing ESD, from what I can tell, over the years. So tell us about the project and what you do.
Actually, we try to replace ESD. That's one of the possible summaries of Pulse Audio. There are possibly others. Pulse Audio is intended to be something like a compass for audio, and it's also intended to be something like an application server for audio, and it's also intended to be something like the compatible sound system, and it's also intended to be something like the counterpart of the Windows sound system, the new Vista user space sound system, and it's also something like a counterpart to Core Audio and MacOS. So you could define it as a lot of different things.
World Peace, is that next?
Does it make tea in any way?
Actually, we don't have yet a Lisp interpreter included, but
Emacs for audio, it's coming. So tell us, what have you thought of Quadec so far?
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, as usual, I mean.
You having a good time?
Yeah, of course I am, but yeah, free drinks yesterday, that was quite good actually.
So that's a highlight. The highlight of quite actually had free drinks last night.
Yeah, that was a highlight, and the low light was waking up on the next morning, having a headache and everything.
You're not the only person who said that this morning, to be honest with you. So have you particularly enjoyed any talks or?
We had a lot of discussions off the sides of talks. I mean, I attended quite a bit of talks, but not that many.
Yeah.
But the discussion with persons, with all the people you meet here, it was quite good.
And going back to Pulse Audio, I mean, you obviously work at Red Hat. I'm assuming that you basically hack on that at Red Hat. Is that right?
Yeah, basically Red Hat employed me just to hack on it. So
cool. So is that going into Fedora? Is that?
Yeah, that's. I'm currently fixing a few things for getting it ready for Fedora 8.
Right.
It's already included in Fedora, but not installed by default. And there's a few bits and pieces left, like proper support for fast user switching, and a little bit of other stuff. And as soon as we have that, it's ready for Fedora 8, and hopefully included then.
And as a project, is it just you working on it, or is there a team of people working on it?
That's mostly me. I guess it's like most free software projects. And there is...
You work on most free software projects?
No.
That's Joe Shaw.
No, but on the other hand, there is Pierre Osman, which is a Swedish guy who works... He mostly does the SynClient stuff in Pulse Audio, because originally Pulse Audio started as a solution for SynClient audio.
Right.
But Yeah, basically that's me and him.
Has there been, I mean, there's obviously quite a lot of interest in Pulse Audio around, but has there been lots of discussion about that at Guardec? Are people coming up and asking you about it? And
not yet. My talk about Pulse Audio is going to be tomorrow at 3, I think, something like that.
Something to watch, then.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, making it sound like the rest of it's shit. Well done. Oh, something to watch of interest.
Well, no, I mean, there was my talk, and after that, I sort of switched off, to be honest. Yeah. I was on Sunday.
You joined up at Red Hat fairly recently, and how are you finding it? Is it a good company?
Yeah, of course it is.
I mean, obviously, you've got to say it's a good company, otherwise you get fired. but
yeah. So, Jono, what do you think of Canonical?
Shit place to work. Who do you work with? I mean, whereabouts do you work? Do you work with other notable open source people, or are you just...
I mean, most notable, the largest part of the open source people work for Red Hat, so they're
stick boot in.
Stick that boot well in there.
So, I actually work together with a lot of very, very bright people at the desk subgroup and everywhere, so... Yeah, actually I'm working from home, so I don't see them that often, but there's IRC and there's conference calls and everything, so yeah.
And I'm assuming yours kind of works mainly, if you're hacking on Pulse Audio, I suppose it's mainly towards Fedora, is that right?
To be honest...
Consider yourself more of a Fedora person than a RHEL person?
Oh, I just don't think that any of the developers actually use RHEL. RHEL is for big companies,
For people with suits and lots of money.
Yeah, but not for hackers. But actually, I'm still running Debian on my machine because I come from Debian. I still haven't found the time to actually do the full switch to Fedora.
Right.
But now that I'm being paid for it, I'm going to change.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah, so thanks for coming on the show and enjoy
the rest
of the... There's been an interesting thing happening at Guardec, hasn't there?
There has, actually, yeah. Speak the interesting thing.
This is brilliant. We've talked about Pidivy quite a bit in the past. The video editing on Linux is, how shall we say it?
Shite.
Dire. Yeah.
No, Dire's the Visio clone. Sorry, go on.
Video editing's pretty ropey, and everyone had lots of faith in Pidivy, and then Pidivy kind of went a bit slow and didn't happen so much, and then everyone had faith in Diva, and Diva looked really promising, and then Michael Dominic went and worked at Nokia and stopped working on it. Now, I don't know if that's the reason why he stopped working on it, but clearly lost interest.
Yes.
And Pidivy's been increasingly developed, and Edward has just been adding
this
stuff to it as it goes.
Edward Hervey.
Adding stuff as... It used to be like loads of UI stuff that didn't work, and now he's just adding features bit by bit.
And now there's a load of UI stuff that doesn't work, and a load of GStream stuff that doesn't work, which is an improvement.
Now that would be unfair.
that is an unfair characterization.
Look, radio, unfair? Never.
Yeah. Pidivy's a very good video editor, apart from the fact that it doesn't actually edit video. So we were talking about this in the pub the other night, and there was Ack, myself, Aidan Delaney, and Edward, I think it was,
yes,
in the discussion, and we were sort of saying about how, you know, you should just kind of do this and do that and the other, and we were talking about how Jacosha has a working timeline, it has all this working stuff in there, why not just dump that into Pidivy? And, you know, he basically was sort of thinking, actually, yeah, you know, that would make some sense. So, I said to him in the pub, if you do it tomorrow, I'll get you drunk tomorrow night.
At the Lug Radio Party.
At the Lug Radio Party, which is unbelievable greatness.
It was unbelievable greatness.
We have the pictures to prove it.
We do.
Oh,
we also now have no money to prove it as well. That everyone who came to Lug Radio Live, the amount of money we got left over from your payments on the door, paid for everyone at Guardec to have a couple of beers. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Lug Radio sponsored party. We like that kind of thing.
Some people are going to spit about that, aren't they? Anyway, Edward spent all day yesterday hacking on this. He didn't actually take the code from Jacosha, he just wrote it from scratch, but he had a day of just concentrated time, and he's just demoed it to us. Pidivy, you can now import video, and you can cut it into segments and reorganise it.
That's
so
really cool.
Actually edits video, but, and he did it in like a day.
I know. I mean, to be honest with you, like you say, you can now import video, you can cut it, you can move it around on the timeline, and you can export, and that's a video editor. Everything else is just kind of nice to haves on top of it, really.
So can you actually export it into anything you actually want?
You can export it into Ogg Theora, but to be honest with you, you export it into Ogg Theora and then FFmpeg it into...
No, that's a lie. You can export it into a load of different formats.
Apparently, what Edward said is that Ogg Theora definitely works. The other stuff
might work, might not work. But to be honest with you,
but that's the win of the GStreamer library. I mean, yeah. everything I've exported into loads of different formats.
And the point of it is that it edits the video. Translating video from one format to another is an already solved problem. If it's not in PTV yet, quite, then don't care.
And basically, if it's supported by GStreamer, then it should encode fine. Yeah. But it's just incredible that he's done that in one day, and you know, it's a real success story for this year's Guadac, I think, because so
he does that all in one day, and we still bitch about the format it takes.
Well, yeah, bitches about the format.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it is quite an important thing, because I mean, that's one thing I'm starting to get involved with, and like, just outputting it to our Ogg Vorbis isn't a great solution, because I'm getting people who are going to want to watch it in other formats.
Oh yeah, I mean, it does do it, and more's coming. I mean, I think that the one of the reasons I really like Guadac is because this kind of thing happens every year. So people all get together and they'll sit around a table and they'll have a chat and they'll have a beer, and then someone will do some hacking, and then there'll be something really great by the end of Guadac.
Yeah, I just think it's incredible, and it's the kind of stuff that I remember it used to be fairly common in conferences, and in recent conferences happens less so, where people would do really cool stuff, and it's good to see that happening at Guadac. And it's just, he just demoed it, and it's finally a video editor that's easy to use.
Yes.
I mean, finally, because it's just such a nightmare, and everyone's wanting to do video stuff with YouTube kind of kicking about. So so credit to the Herve man.
Credit to the Herve monster, second most French man at Guadac.
Second
behind Hubert Figuere.
Yeah,
who's incredibly French.
He's extremely French. So,
good work, Edward Hervey.
Nice.
We're talking to Rob McQueen from Calabra. Well, I found out runs Calabra, which I didn't realise.
Yeah, amongst others, yes. me and Philippe Canaf, the two directors there.
So, how have you enjoyed Guadac?
It's been awesome. It's been absolutely exhausting. I think they should somehow condense the conference into one day, and then we can all go home and sort of get sleep. But what we actually ended up doing is going to all the bars and drinking until the not-so-small hours of the morning.
Yeah, that sounds pretty normal for Guadac, to be honest with you. That's exactly what everyone did.
Yeah.
Anything in particular you saw that you thought was good?
I think I quite enjoyed Havoc's keynotes. I'm one of the fans of the online desktop stuff. I'm drinking that Kool-Aid. we had a meeting earlier where we were sort of talking about how can we avoid the whole thing where you sit down at your desktop and you set up your MSN accounts, whatever, got with these people, and then you've got them all again on Jabber and again on AOL and sort of thing. And then you go and set up your Android, and then it does exactly the same thing. And wouldn't it be nice if we could install that on a server?
Yes, absolutely.
That's
some
kind of online desktop cunningness. And so hopefully we can, you know, mash up EDS and Mugshot and make that work or something.
All that stuff ought to be possibly, really should. And then we're moving the whole desktop into the browser with Alex's Pyro desktop.
Or something like that. Which is moving the browser out of the browser into the desktop.
Which is nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite cool, and I've installed it, and it didn't work very well, but it's very early. But it is nuts in an extremely nutty way.
It's very interesting. I mean, I looked at the website and spoke to people about it. Unfortunately, I missed the talk in a series of boring meetings, but sorry, I mean, they're very exciting, no mobile meetings.
Boring meetings. So, what are Calabra here to talk about? Telepathy all the time, or is
that no? I mean, the stuff that we're working on. I mean, obviously, we're very involved in instant messaging stuff, and telepathy is our main product there. But on the sort of streaming side, so making voice and video calls, then Farsight sort of sets up GStreamer to do all that stuff for you. Going a little further down the stack, we're working on NAT traversal technologies. We've got a library called LibNice, which should be able to poke through horrible firewalls and things.
What's it called? Something beginning in S.
Stun.
Stun. I thought that was a sole problem because of Stun. I'm completely wrong about this now.
Well, Stun's a bit rubbish, really.
Okay. I mean,
the idea with Stun is that you can send this packet, and then you can find out what kind of NAT you're behind, and then given this information, everything will work. It turns out that it doesn't really. SIP people have invented some kind of thing where you work out all of your network interfaces, they work out all of theirs, and then you try every single combination until you find one that works. And that's called ICE. Interactive connectivity establishment. So it's like a sort of Stun combinatorial explosion until you find one that works.
And that's a good idea.
It is, yeah. I mean, you wait 100 milliseconds before you send another packet and whatever, you know. But it's what Google's libjingle stuff does. So that's how Google Talk basically works in like 95% of the cases, whereas SIP works in about 5% of the cases.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. So the last 5% you use a relay, so you know Google have servers and you connect to them and then everything goes through. But with SIP, that's like the norm rather than the exception. But
the Skype vibe, where if you've got two people behind restricted firewalls, then you just bounce everything off the server.
I mean, the kind of bottom case in Google is that you pretend to be an HTTPS connection and then you can go through a proxy. So even people in Nokia can use Google Talk.
Nice. Although you can tunnel video over through a proxy in an HTTPS connection.
Yeah, it turns out you can. I mean, Google Talk doesn't have support for video, but we've got that kind of stuff working, and cool. We send it over libjingle in the same way, and although it's sort of low resolution and slightly kind of patchy, you actually get the video through in the end, and so Google are kind enough to send that through.
So this is going to allow me with with telepathy on my GNOME desktop to talk to someone else on the other side of the world behind a restricted firewall with telepathy on their GNOME desktop.
Yeah.
But none of my friends have got telepathy in a GNOME. Well, some of them have, but most of them are running MSN.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Do you have to fix both ends of the connection for all this to work?
Yeah, well, part of the game with telepathy is to hide all of the protocol nastiness behind this nice telepathy abstraction layer.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got MSN backends, you've got Google Talk backends or whatever, you know, all happening and being done. But you can only do exciting natural stuff if the other guy is also doing the same thing.
Right.
And protocols that do that is Google Talk. And also SIP is going to use this ICE stuff as well. I mean, that's where that technology comes from.
Cool. So XMPP forever.
Yeah, XMPP should work really well. And I mean, stuff like MSN and Yahoo, they do use kind of rudimentary or earlier versions of ICE. So in some cases, they actually work as well. And hopefully we can make LibNice to do all the flavors so that you can plug it into telepathy and get the calls going through.
Excellent.
I mean, one aspect of telepathy, I saw one of the talks earlier in the week. It sounds like a really nice idea to, like you said, have MSN, AOL, etc., all talking through the same protocol, essentially. The company I work for actually is looking at this kind of stuff from the server side of things rather than the actual desktop. But all our customers, obviously, are using these kind of things, so we're looking to see how we can protect our customers with this kind of information. You were saying about the relay aspect of it all. Do you see that as being a big issue with trying to get this, and we were saying about having the transport there on other desktops to the other users and stuff like that, as being a big issue, or do you see this as just an extension to what you're doing?
Well, the kind of ICE technology and LibNice and LibJingle and that kind of thing, they work peer-to-peer in a lot more cases than any other kind of natural technology. So you can get through in like 95% of the cases. But, you know, there is always a situation where you're behind this firewall, he's behind this NAT, and you just can't get through unless you've got a relay server. So it is pretty important to, I guess, have a kind of bottom like fallback option of a relay server. If you have a Gmail account, then you know you get these authentication tokens off there, and you can use Google Server. But hopefully, you know, stuff like Jabber.org will end up with a similar kind of proxy once Jingle is kind of established and rolled out with XMPP and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, where I'm coming from is I work for a company that does security protection for essentially it started with email.
Right.
And basically, we're looking at having this kind of stuff, having protection, so people are sharing files, etc., through IM means and what have you. So we need them to go through a transport mechanism that
right,
we
so you can
control.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, I mean, looking at what you're doing with telepathy, this transportation protocol looks like it would be ideal for some of the stuff we would be doing. So I'm quite interested in from like the relay perspective rather than the peer-to-peer.
Yeah. I mean, you can always... I mean, one of the goals we had with telepathy was that the abstraction would be flexible enough that you can use it wherever you want to. So we've actually worked with one client who was trying to do sort of gatewaying between certain other communication technologies and instant messaging. So they
tactfully done.
And they were looking at telepathy as a sort of server component, so that they could proxy everything through, and then they just have this one code base that would know how to speak telepathy, and they could plug in whatever the protocol was being used. So certainly you could arrange like a proxy along those lines. I mean, we've got plans to do something. I think Simon calls it headless chicken. So you've got all of your telepathy connection managers running on your Curlo box, running on a server, and you turn up with your laptop, your desktop, whatever, and you sort of proxy that through, and then your clients can pick up any messages people have left for you. So you're already in all these channels.
So essentially, you could actually have anyone turn up with any laptop, and as soon as it opens, it tries to open up a connection, the telepathy just picks it up and says, right, I know what to do with that.
Yeah, so you bring all the kind of accounts that you've got configured on the server, you can tunnel them through locally. Yeah. And interestingly enough, you could also use telepathy to do that proxying, but then your head kind of starts to explode. So you log into one account, you set up a tube, you get all your other telepathy over the tube, and then, you know,
yeah. No, well, we're not going to talk about that anymore because it scares me. moving on from collaborator Guardek, what do you think has gone really well this year? What have you been most excited by?
Well, I was quite excited by our party. I think that was good laugh.
It was the second best Guardek party, in my opinion.
Oh, your party, yeah. That was good laugh as well. But I've enjoyed the whole thing. I mean, it's always a good opportunity to meet up with all of these kind of familiar names and sort of meet people in real life.
Yeah,
you know, put faces to the IRC names, that kind of thing.
That's the thing, really.
And it sort of bounce around. I was quite happy to see that, you know, the mugshot crowd who sort of disappeared from Gnome for a bit have come back appearance.
Yeah.
And it's been really good to speak to, you know, kind of great names, so Harry Pennington, Owen Taylor, whatever, who, you know, you see them in every single Gnome component, and you've done something here and here and here, and then you've kind of disappeared for 2 years, and I'm like, oh, well, what are we doing now? And so they've come back, and then hopefully we can set a bit of a direction with the online desktop stuff. And,
It's going to be cool.
Get a bit of momentum. Because the one thing that I've kind of been thinking is that, you know, KTE is stealing a bit of a march on us on the whole trumpet blowing, rallying around a kind of cause to get KTE4 up and running and out.
It was pretty apparent to everybody that Gnome had a good, strong, consistent direction, and the KDE people were kind of all over the place, but they've got their shit together now, and we appear to be losing it a bit.
Yeah.
So things like Guardek are good for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there's something that we need to rally behind and kind of develop towards, because we've actually got a lot of really powerful technology, and a lot of the stuff that kind of that's in free desktop is actually kind of originated from Gnome in some levels. And KDE gone, oh, this is all quite good actually, and then they've put, you know, nice UIs and things on top of it. And
which
they're
is
actually
the point of free desktop.
They're actually the ones getting the kind of cool stuff out the door, whereas we're kind of stuck in the engine room going, oh, we can make it go really fast.
Yeah,
and then like, nobody's using this.
it would be good to see that there's an awful lot of stuff being bandied around. You've got things like telepathy for that side of things, and GStreamer does loads of cool stuff, and Clutter and Pigment for UI things and like.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really like to see people actually bolting all this shit together into something really good.
Yes.
Which is obviously what we're trying to do with Jukosha.
Yeah, the open standards guys were kind of poking us to, you know, look, Cluster, we've got a GStreamer video sync. Hint, hint. You could do some kind of video client that had some 3D and stuff, like iChat.
Wouldn't that be good? Yes, absolutely. Okay, thank you very much for coming to talk to us. Robert Green.
Yeah, I love Guardek.
That was Guardek.
Guardek is such a great conference. For nothing more, I mean, the conference, you know, itself, the organisation of the conference, is relatively similar every year, whatever, it's a conference, right? But the people that come to Guardek, I just think are fantastic. And the discussion that happens at Guardek and the atmosphere is just, it's just mind-blowing.
You do get the kind of the impression that there are big things going on, just people sat on the floor hacking away on their laptops, and dramatic things are going to come out of it.
Well, a great example of that is Pitavi, right? We had a couple of beers in the pub, and we were talking to Edward Hervey about Pitavi, and we were saying, why don't you take some bits from Jukosha and roll it into Pitavi? And we're talking about how the design could work, and he tried taking some bits from Jukosha, but it didn't quite fit right, and he basically spent one day hacking on it and got editing working in Pitavi. And that was just
exactly
from a conversation in a pub, and obviously Edward sitting down and thinking, yeah, well, this could be an interesting way of doing it, and doing it, and that's the kind of shit that you need to see at places.
Exactly.
Like,
I mean, look at things like Alex Gravely's Pyro Desktop. You know, whether you think that the thing itself is a good implementation of the idea, the fact that there's been,
it's excited a lot more discussion. There's been this huge, big discussion about how GNOME fits with the web and how the web fits with GNOME over this conference.
The online thing has been a big topic of discussion after Havok's presentation.
You'd almost think someone stood up right at the beginning of the conference and did a talk about exactly that. Oh, they did. It was me.
Someone significant.
But unfortunately...
There's that self-righteous attitude again shining through.
Well, I mean... It
was you that made all that discussion happen, not Havok Pennington.
It was not at all me. It was Havok and Alex. But, I mean... This is a big thing that lots of people have been... Everyone's sitting about in the corridors and in the pub talking about where we go from here.
Yeah, it's cool, and it's nice to see... this year was better than last year. It was better in one way than last year in the fact that there seemed to be a lot more relevant people here. So one person who was a notable exception was Miguel.
Yeah,
but it was nice to see Nat Friedman here as an example, you know. But it was good to see everybody together and working and talking about different bits and pieces. I think this venue is less suited to Guadec.
I think it's not
bad, but it's
quite a formal.
It's
venue.
Way too formal, and it was well run, but I wouldn't hold it here if I was to hold a conference, you know.
I mean, I wasn't at last year's, or I've never been to a Guadec before.
Mm. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. I thought it was really good, precisely because, as you say, you're wandering around the corridors trying to find which room you're in, and you're bumping into Nat, and you're bumping into all sorts of people who you don't like. I know you.
Yeah.
And your best fanboy voice. But as a venue, it's okay. You know, it's not... It's a lot... Yeah, things are a little bit more spread out. The rooms are a bit more spread out. It's a little bit more formal than But it works.
People manage to get to talks, and people manage to have conversations, which I suppose...
The guys who organised Rider actually did say that they do regard the most important thing about any conference is the people. The venue is way down the list. I have to agree with that entirely.
Speaking about the organisation, I mean, I think it's been, ignoring the venue for the moment, I think it's been well organised by Thomas Word and Paul Cooper and Bastian Nacera. You know, I think they've done a good job getting everything together.
There's only two things I think that they could have improved on, and this has been spoken to them about. I mean, the one thing was obviously signs. I mean, it was just, this place is amazing as it is without having any signs. And there was no signage whatsoever, and it was impossible to find some...
There was actually a map.
It was impossible to find the venue, let alone find... I mean, there was no indication outside the venue about where it was, and there was no signage that I could see. And there was a few signs in the venue, but the signs are not particularly good. So that's one thing that can be easily fixed. But, I mean, it's like I was talking to Paul about this, you know, you've got so many other things to think about, like speakers. Things like signs. I mean, well, we made the same mistake in the first year, you know? I mean, it's like, you forget about certain things with Lug Radio Live, you know? And you learn each year that you do it. And, of course, Guadec is in a different place every year, and even though there's some shared knowledge, it's not always... You know, I think things like signs are tiny.
That's something that Kim Gill flagged. He organised last year's Guadec in Spain. And he's trying to solve the problem that it's basically a different group organise it every year. And the thing about sharing knowledge between the different organisational groups is that it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
But I think that's actually the one thing that I've been to several conferences now so far this summer, and that's the one thing that's really struck me is there's all these little small details that you completely forget about. When someone says, how do you organise a conference? You go, well, speakers, venue,
it's only the experience.
And you don't think about things like signs and things like having to have a float on the door until 15 minutes before the end.
That's a good example as well. The second thing which I thought they could have improved on, which I was, to be honest with you, I was disappointed with, was the lack of social events.
I mean, you just want to get drunk.
Well, I think, to me...
It's a social conference!
To me, the real value in getting in something like Guadec is not only getting people together to talk about GNOME, which is one thing, but also getting people together to reinitiate those kind of connections. Like, so this is something that Scott James Remnant told me at the first Ubuntu Developer Summit that I went to, and he said, you know, you really need to get people together once every 6 months or a year, so they can reinitiate the kind of the bonding that they have when they meet together. And it sounds a bit hand wavy, but it's true. You need to get people together.
There was actually a talk at the very beginning of Duardic about marketing. And it was one of the things he said, that part of what you're actually doing with marketing is not putting the word out there. It's actually getting all the people who are involved in the project together and selling it back to them again.
Yeah.
Re-energising them is a horrible marketing word.
It's a lot easier to get into a long-distance email discussion with someone about the future of GTK or whatever, if there's someone that you've been out with and had a beer with and had a chat with.
Yeah, huge difference.
Yeah,
it makes a really huge difference.
To some extent, it kind of knocks the edges off your heroes a bit. It's a lot more difficult to think, Robert Love, my God, he works for Google and he's the guy who did Project Utopia and he's this big, important kernel hacker, if you've been for a pint with the guy. Hmm. And that's a good thing to some extent.
Yeah, I completely agree. But despite these little niggles.
They are only little niggles.
Yeah, we are good picking.
A good conference, well run, and PyCon, a very good conference, well run. So, you know, it's been a privilege for us to come to these two and do the conference special.
It has, yes. Thank you very much to the Quadic team for inviting us to be media partners. Again, we are available for children's parties for bar mitzvahs.
And likewise to the PyCon people, and we look forward to seeing, we look forward to being at both conferences again in 2008. So, one last thing we should talk about is season 5.
It's season 5, yes. This is, I'm not sure whether the conference special counts as the end of season 4 or not, but season 5 returns
on the 24th.
Season 4A.
24th of September. Will be the first episode of season 5 of Lug Radio.
Now, one thing we've been talking about a lot recently, and we should be frank about this, okay, is that, you know, it's like a band, you know, when a band's released sort of 3 or 4 albums, they get to a point and they could potentially start going a bit stale, a bit, you know, a bit kind of like pipe and slippers.
So you think we need to do Jazz Odyssey?
So, so we've been talking a lot recently about things that we can do to keep Lug Radio interesting, to revitalise it, and we met up one evening and just had an absolute blitz of ideas. We all went to bed ridiculously late. We've come up with loads of wacky ideas, new things that we're going to do in season 5, and it's going to be an exciting and an interesting season for everybody, I think. But we want to hear everybody's ideas, don't we?
You know? We do, absolutely.
So, you know, we've been doing it for a long time now, and thank you to everybody who's continuing to listen to the show and continuing to support the show. It's all good.
Yes, so if you've got ideas about what you'd like to see happening in Lug Radio, contact us at show@lugradio.org, as usual.
Absolutely.
Or on the Lug Radio forums, which are forums.lugradio.org.
Yep. And good stuff. So
okay.
Shall we wrap it up?
We shall.
We should, yep.
And we'll see you guys in season 5.
See you in season 5.
Me.